Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
This is a real win for our teachers, for our kids, for our educators in the classroom.
You can't set a house on fire, call 911, and claim to be a hero. That does not work.
They're only willing to go so far. They're able to go further, but they're only willing to go so far. So the power is really going to be in the educators' hands now. We have an incredible infrastructure and movement built. Now we got to sustain it and bring answers. And I think one of the ways that we do that is through the ballot.
So what I'm happy about is to be able to put the contention and the disagreement over the past several years behind us and focus on celebrating Arizona baseball. And that's what this new proposal allows us to do.
And with us to talk about the end of the legislative session, what got done and what didn't, and teacher pay raises, among other things, our political consultant Lorna Romero, formerly of Malera Alvarez and John McCain's 2016 Senate campaign, and Sam Richard of Creosote Partners. Guys, good morning. Thanks for coming back.
Good morning.
Great to be here.
So, Lorna, I don't think it's an understatement to say teacher pay kind of dominated the last week or so of the legislative session. How big a difference did the presence of the Red for Ed movement, the 50,000 people marching on Thursday, have on the session?
Clearly it took a little bit of the news cycle this week, I would say, but it had a huge impact. I mean, even if the policy discussions behind the scenes would have ended the same way if there were these marches or not, just visually, this got a lot of attention throughout the state. I mean, this is the largest march that happened at the Capitol, and you could clearly tell this is an important issue to teachers and educators. And so, I mean, it was a win for the Red for Ed movement. It was a win for Governor Ducey. I just wish that there was a little bit more bipartisanship in the conversation, but, I mean, it was a huge impact that these teachers had, and I think that that's going to have a residual impact for the next few months as we approach November.
Are both sides to blame for the lack of bipartisanship?
I would say yes, to a certain degree, yes.
Sam, general observations?
I mean, I think one of the things that jumps to mind is that old proverb that says that history will always be kind to the lion until the lamb is given voice. So, I mean, I think definitely...
Was that an adage or a proverb?
I don't know. Maybe a distinction without a difference. But, I think that, at least in that context, I think that, you know, there definitely are things that both sides could have done better to lead towards more bipartisan conversations. But I think at the end of the day, when you're in the position of power, it's incumbent on you to open the door to those conversations. And really, earlier in the session, we saw great models of bipartisanship when it came to the opioid special session. That idea, that model for those conversations weren't really expressed here when it came to the education funding debate. And I think that you really did see the push from this Red for Ed movement to start the conversation, because the 20% raise for teachers was not in the state of the state. You know, there were tax cuts and other priorities that were highlighted at the beginning of the session. So without that political and outside pressure, the governor and legislative leadership would not have had this conversation.
Lorna, you mentioned the visuals of especially that first Thursday when, you know, an estimated 50,000 people showed up all wearing red to the Capitol. I'm wondering if maybe that was almost more significant than the actual policy that came out of it, because the governor had proposed his 20 by 2020 plan before the teachers walked out. And in the end, that's basically, with a few minor changes, what the legislature ended up passing.
No, you're correct. I mean, a week before the teacher strike happened, Governor Ducey, you know, publicly released his proposal. And you're correct. The end result is pretty much very close to what Governor Ducey proposed. Maybe that moved other lawmakers, other Republicans that probably when they initially heard the proposal were a little bit more weary of it. And I think that made people realize that, I mean, there's been this whole conversation of who's really behind this. Is it the unions? Is it this? Is it that? But to see 50,000 plus people marching at the Capitol, for them it wasn't politics. It was a passion for the issue. And so I really do think that that moved the needle for some lawmakers down there. Like you said, Governor Ducey, I think he showed tremendous leadership when he came out with his proposal. Sam's right. Was it initially in his state of the state? No. But he saw the growing movement. And he was listening to, you know, superintendents and teachers. He was meeting with folks, and he realized that this was an issue that he needed to tackle. And so that's why I think, going back to the bipartisanship issue, you know, him releasing this proposal, there should have been cheers from both sides, in all honesty, because to talk about this significant investment in K-12 education we haven't had this conversation in the past decade, you know, without the, with the exception of Prop 100 and Prop 123, talking about just general fund, you know, appropriations for K-12, this has been unheard of. And so people should be, you know, doing high kicks from both sides of the aisle because this is exciting news. And so, but I do think that that Red for Ed visual movement probably moves some other lawmakers that were a little weary initially.
Well, Sam, in the end, there seemed to be a bit of a dichotomy because the Red for Ed organizer said, okay, when the governor signs this plan, we will end our walkout. And yet they were also encouraging members not to vote for it because it wasn't doing enough.
Well, so I think there were a couple of things at play here. And I think that, you know, to piggyback on one of the things that Lorna was mentioning where, you know, we had 50,000 plus people that were newly part of the process. There were a lot of rapidly moving and a lot of rapidly shifting conversations. So, you know, there were changes of understanding of what was happening moment to moment from the teachers on the Capitol from hour to hour, right? And even sometimes half hour to half hour. So I think a lot of the conversation in real time should probably be separated from the larger picture, and I think that both of those things can be held together in you know, creative tension almost, where, you know, you can say that yes, that was why the walkout happened, because the teachers were not going to go back to work unless that there was a commitment made to funding public education in a new and real way. And you can also believe that this isn't the final solution, that we need a sustainable and dedicated source of funding to make sure that education is not up to the whims of politicians. It's up to the people.
And Sam, based on the fact that I could say in August we should look at this, but because of the way legislative districts are drawn, there aren't that many districts in play. Let's look ahead to November before we get to ballot measure possibilities. How do you see this potentially affecting things? Mark and I both spoke with teachers this morning who are ready to get out. They learn a lot more about the process by going down to the Capitol all those days. They understand what's going on. Do you expect that to impact a lot of what happens in November, whether in terms of voting or just in terms of messaging?
Oh, 100%. And I don't even think it's a will conversation. I think it is conversation. I mean, we have, you know, we know that these are water cooler conversations that are happening right now, right? Instead of, you know, talking about the NL leading Diamondbacks or you know, what was on TV last night, teachers are talking about committee of the whole and Senate bills and House bills. And I think that that's going to dramatically shift the awareness of what's going to happen in the primaries in August and the general election in November. Without a doubt, education is going to be on the lips of voters and the Arizonans across the state.
And Lorna, does that affect the expectations people might have for candidates? Not in terms of ideology, but in terms of what the issues that they're talking about are.
No, I definitely think so. And, you know, education's consistently been in the top three, you know, issues for voters every election cycle. It always fluctuates between immigration, the economy, and education, but it's always in the top three. What I would urge people, since this has been such a hot topic issue the past few weeks, there's a lot of misinformation out there, you know, and in terms of, you know, what the legislature has done in terms of cuts, what additional investments have happened in the state, and this is where it gets really policy wonkish, and it takes a lot of time and effort to understand it. But I mean, 2008 hit us really hard in the state. And I think sometimes people have a tendency to forget that. We were $3 billion in the hole. The state was hemorrhaging. Unfortunately, everybody got hit with those cuts. And so now, fast forward 10 years later, we're recovering. Are we going to be back to the levels that we were in 2006, 2007? Probably not. Our economy is different. But since then, and since, you know, Governor Brewer did the temporary sales tax, and since Governor Ducey's been in office, like I mentioned, there have been consistent investments in K-12 education. And I don't think people should just discount that. That's huge. And so for this is going to become a political issue on both sides, because Republicans are going to have to defend their record and explain to folks what they've been doing for K-12 education, and that the rhetoric that they've been hearing for the past few weeks from some union folks isn't necessarily the case. So you're going to hear it from both sides, and it's going to get pretty intense.
Well, and one of the places that it seems as though we'll be hearing it is from folk collecting signatures. Now, Sam, your firm is working on this Invest in Education Act. It seems as though teachers, and many of them who were wearing red down at the Capitol this week, are on board with trying to collect signatures to increase income taxes for high-earning Arizonans. How might the effort to put that on the ballot, and then let's assume it makes the ballot for a moment, how might that impact the rest of what people vote on come November?
Well, I think that what we heard loud and clear throughout the conversation was that the funding education question has not been answered yet. And, you know, it definitely is a broad set of stakeholders that is behind the Invest in Education Act. And I think that what we're going to see here is already a continued energized set of people who are signing those petitions. I think that already we have amazing numbers from folks just signing it throughout the last couple of weeks from meeting at the Capitol. And now that we have an opportunity to kind of, you know, really talk to people about the need to have a dedicated and sustainable source for education funding, it'll be an important time because now the noise from the legislative session is done. And I think if I could, too, I just want to highlight that, yes, I think definitely there have been some modest additions to education funding from the governor and the legislative leadership over the last few years. But I think you can't see that in a vacuum. You have to know, now that we've approached sine die here and it's in our rearview mirror, we know that in 28 years, so 28 times out of the last 29 years, we have had cuts to our revenue. So those investments aren't nearly as much as they could have been if we just stopped giving away corporate tax giveaways and other cutouts of our revenue model. There's two sides to the ledger.
Lorna, what do you think? I mean, does the fact that people are going to be out collecting signatures and that this issue could be on the ballot, does that affect things come Election Day?
Well, of course. I mean, there's a number of different variables that are going to impact Election Day. I mean, who knows what's going to be on the ballot? There's a number of things that are up in the air, and there's just a bunch of political dynamics. But just to get back to the proposal that's on the table that's potentially going to be on the ballot with this income tax measure, you know, as I was just mentioning before, we were hit hard in 2008. And now that we're in a position to talk about investments from the state into K-12 education, into higher ed, is because of a number of the reforms that were done to enhance the economy. We were a construction-based economy before the crash. What leadership in the state realized is we need to diversify. And in order to do that, we needed to create a climate in the state that was going to attract businesses, you know, from a number of different industries, high-paying jobs, et cetera. And so to just look at increasing a certain segment of the tax base in a vacuum, I think, does a disservice because we need to see how this is going to impact the economy as a whole. We want to continue to attract people to the state and jobs, and I think that this ballot measure is going to detract from the growth that we've been having.
And we'll talk more about that in a moment with Lorna Romero, Sam Richard, Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. It's the Friday Newscap on the show. This is the Friday Newscap on the show here on 91.5 in Phoenix with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. Joining us this morning, political consultant Lorna Romero, formerly of Malera Alvarez and John McCain's 2016 Senate campaign, and Sam Richard of Creosote Partners. Sam, before we move on from this, I want to give you a chance because Creosote Partners is heavily involved in the ballot measure potential. Why don't I have your response to Lorna?
Yeah, I definitely understand and expect some of the pushback from kind of where the established kind of political elite is going to come from, right? We already see that the chamber, the state chamber, has come out in fierceful opposition to this increase of taxes on those that are most able to pay it, frankly, that have benefited from three decades of extensive cuts to corporate and individual taxes.
Is there a danger of class warfare potentially? I mean, is that how it's going to be framed? Because there is the feeling that sales tax, even though it is regressive, it affects everybody.
Well, yeah, but I think that the first part, I think, is the most important, right? We needed to look at a non-regressive option that is going to be a sustainable source of funding for a very important piece, as Lorna was saying earlier. One of the top three issues that voters are going to go to the poll with in their minds is education funding. So this is going to be a sustainable source, and we're going to ask the people who are most able and ready to help support that funding.
Well, and just to chime in on that, there's a lot of disagreement if this is even a sustainable funding stream. I mean, when you look at corporate income tax, individual income tax, there's a lot of volatility in that. And especially when you're looking at quote unquote high earners is how they're categorizing this. But you also need to talk about the small business aspect to this. A number of small businesses file under the individual income tax as LLCs. And so I haven't seen the full-blown analysis of this, but this isn't just, you know, quote, taxing the wealthy. There are going to be a lot of small business owners that are impacted by this as well. So, you know, for me, I understand the conversation about wanting to talk about dedicated funding streams, et cetera. But like I mentioned before, that can't be done in a vacuum because you have to understand how this is going to impact all segments of our economy. And in the short term, I think the proposal that the governor came up with, this is a reliable funding source for the next, 3 years as teachers are going to get, more additional assistance and teacher pay increases.
And we'll talk more about the ballot measure if it, in fact, it makes the ballot.
Yeah, let's talk about something else, speaking about education and the ballot. Before legislators adjourned early this morning, one of the things they did not do was amend or change in any way the school voucher law, which will allow the referendum to continue in November. Lorna, how significant do you think it is that that will be on the ballot? There had been some talk, for example, that some Republicans maybe didn't want that on the ballot because it would draw people out to vote on that maybe wouldn't vote for them.
Mm-hmm. We've had this situation happen quite a few times at the Capitol where there's a ballot referral measure or some kind of, bill, and it gets referred to the ballot, and then immediately they repeal it, so it's not on the ballot. This situation is a little bit more politically dicey because, to credit AZSOS and the group behind it, this was an all-volunteer effort to refer it to the ballot. And so I understand there's two schools of thought: get it off the ballot. We don't want that to be an issue that people vote on, because either way, if they vote yes, it's voter protected. If they vote it down, what impact does that have to the movement? And then on the other side, it's, what does me voting to repeal it, what is that telling the people that spent so much time and energy to get on? So I understand the political conundrum that some folks were in. Do I think that issue alone is going to, like we mentioned before, there's going to be so much stuff happening at the ballot this year. I don't know if that issue by itself at this point, maybe a few months ago if you would have talked to me, I would have said something different, is really going to necessarily move the needle. Now we have education funding. Now we have this energy initiative. We have a number of other things happening in the state. So I don't know how significant that issue alone is going to be at the ballot.
And I think what it also shows, too, is that it's not just about teacher pay. I think that's been the conversation for the last week or so, the raise for teachers and some of the other things around education funding. But, just because the legislature and the governor had checked that box, that doesn't mean education is off the minds of voters. School choice has been a big issue and a big piece of the conversation. And I think that what we saw with that all-volunteer effort from AZSOS was that this is an issue that voters care about. And the fact that it was unable to be repealed and replaced, I think also just really points to the fact that there's political pressure on lawmakers to let the voters have a say of whether or not they want an expansion of school vouchers. And I think that you're going to see in November, the resounding answer to that is no.
One of the other things that lawmakers didn't get to was Governor Ducey's school safety plan. It got watered down a little bit and amended in the Senate. The House, as far as I know, didn't even take it up. A few weeks ago, it seemed like this was a pretty big priority for the governor. You had the March for Our Lives folks, a lot of students camping out at the Capitol. Lorna, how important is it that didn't happen?
Well, you saw in the budget a few items get put into there regarding, behavioral health specialists for schools, and some additional resources. And I agree. The last time I was on this program, it was the day before he was going to announce his package. And I said then, it's probably going to upset people on the right and the left. And clearly it did.
You were right.
I was right. One thing that I'm right about, I should call it a day. And like I said, anytime that, the governor comes up with a proposal, you have to negotiate with folks. And so a lot has changed in the world in the past few weeks. And so with that, I'm sure negotiating for teacher pay increases and additional assistance and et cetera, that was probably part of the conversation is, what you can actually get done in this short of a session regarding school safety. Do I think the issue is going to go away? No. Unfortunately, it's a polarizing issue, but I think the governor is going to continue to show leadership on this. I don't think that, just because he didn't get it done this session doesn't mean that he's not going to continue to move forward with that proposal.
And I would say just again, we've talked a lot about the people power of teachers. There was an incredible amount of people power on display with the March for Our Lives movement here in Phoenix. I'm sure that you've had Jordan and Jacob on and their team, and these amazing high school students that are definitely going to be Lorna and his boss one day are just absolutely fantastic. And the movement that they led and the conversations that they created around that school safety bill is largely the reason why it did not ever get up to the governor's desk.
And just I just want to go back to the ESA situation real quick. We were talking about school choice, and Arizona is probably one of the leading states when it comes to the school choice movement in the nation. So I wouldn't necessarily discount the passion that people have for school choice in this state when it comes to the ballot. And I and the defenders of the school choice movement are going to defend it hard in November. So I wouldn't just say that it's a slam dunk that this is going to go down. I mean, this could easily be favorable at the ballot.
And Lauren, in our final 2 minutes, continuing with Mark's theme of stuff that didn't get done, this is not as sexy and yet pretty darn important. Where are we with water policy in Arizona? We're seeing fights with the CAP and Department of Water Resources, Central Arizona Project, and other states. It seemed like that was something that should have been a major priority. Any chance of a special session related to water?
Oh, it's special. There's always a chance for a special session. Come on. but I hope that people are, you know, sine-dying and focusing on November, and that they'll just have interim committees and conversations until next session. But you're right. In January, the hot topic was water. Everyone said water was going to be the most controversial issue. And it was for a few months. And then
Pretty dry season we had, too.
And then now for the past few weeks, everyone's been like, water? What are we even talking about? I mean, it hasn't really been that big of a topic of conversation. But the governor made it clear it's a priority of his. And like I said, with the school safety thing, just because it doesn't get addressed in one session doesn't mean the conversation's going away. And so I think he's going to continue to show leadership on this and work with all the affected stakeholders on it.
Sam, close it out for us.
I think that, you know, that conversation really just got off to a little bit of a rocky start with how the whole question was presented. And there also, I think, was a little bit of a sense of urgency that I think as the conversation went around, kind of was discovered that maybe it wasn't as urgent as we had previously thought. So I think that some of the efforts to really push through a decision or a resolution during this session kind of was tabled for other activities. And, you know, it's already May. So people, you know, not to scare everybody, but we're 6 months away from November. So, I think that everyone's kind of set their sights there. So, you know, let's push the water conversation for now.
There's always a deadline to look for. Sam Richard of Creosote Partners, political consultant Lorna Romero, formerly of Malera Alvarez, and John McCain's 2016 Senate campaign. Guys, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.